It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the two of us are in the studio today, and Joey will be back soon. He got a little stuff going on with his soon-to-be fatherhood doubling up, and some family out of town and stuff. So hope they have a really good time. Got another beautiful day for it. We've really been on a tear on Saturday mornings for weather for the most part this year. Gotta love it. My car said 83 on the way out here, and it's August 9th. It could be 97, but it's not.
Yeah, I'll take that any day.
No kidding. So I'm very happy. Anyway, there's a whole bunch to do today, as you can probably imagine. Seems like every week the news kind of outpaces anybody's ability to keep up with it. It's crazy. I guess that's probably driven from all the stuff going on right at the top. And that's fine with me. We've got a couple things. One, I will make kind of a semi-public service announcement pretty soon here about some people that are affected, some of which I guarantee are listening right now. So we'll get into that in just a moment. But first, I'd like to welcome back all of the regulars. You keep showing up, and we keep showing up, and this thing goes on and on well into year number 11 now, as hard as it is to believe. And you know, I can't possibly be that old, and I don't think Adam can either. But somehow it happens, so we'll just keep doing it. If you're new to the show, if you've stumbled upon it or somebody told you about it, try to listen for the whole hour. We'll discuss all kinds of fun things. And we'll discuss those fun things the way we want to, unless you want to change the subject a little bit. And then all you got to do is pick up the phone, dial 904-222-8255. We will put you on air, and we'll talk about whatever it is you want to talk about, whether it's a question, observation, or whatever. And also remind people, if you are kind of the timid type and don't want to go on air, which is really dumb, you know, it can happen, but we never bite. Then you can also email us at info@strivuswealth.com, and we will get that either during the show or by next week. I do have some things to say about some things that happened last week, too. So we'll always catch up. And meanwhile, we'll bring to you the most up-to-date things that we know about, starting with what happened on the market this week, which was pretty pleasant for the most part.
It was very pleasant, and it didn't start off that way.
No.
Monday morning, the futures were down, the market dropped. It looked like it was going to be another typical August week of volatility, but then something weird happened. The market went up. And it didn't stop going up. It was a very good week, and I think that it was very unexpected. I really did not think that we'd see a week like this. But what really encourages me is that I think it's being driven by earnings. We've seen a really good earnings season.
Looking around, I think you're right.
The net result of the week was the Dow being up 1.3%, the S&P up 2.4%, and the NASDAQ climbed almost 4%. So when I say a good week, it was really a good week. The over 1,500 companies have now reported their earnings for the second quarter, and 74% of those have beat their earnings targets so far. But what's even more impressive is that 75% have beat on their revenue targets, and that you rarely hear a revenue beat rate higher than a earnings beat rate, and you rarely hear one in the 70s. That's
right.
Really impressive.
Yeah, I don't know if it can hold out to the end of the earnings season, but it's been a pattern that's pretty steady through what we've done so far.
It hasn't changed that much.
Not really.
So, and then on top of that, 13% of companies are actually raising their forward guidance. That number is just off the charts good. Only 5% are lowering their forward guidance. So the spread between those two is what we usually look at. That's 8%. I don't remember another 8% quarter in recent memory anyways. So really good news coming out of Wall Street, way better than I think anyone expected. I'm a little encouraged by all of that. The market right now is pricing in an 88.9% chance of a 25 basis point rate cut at the September Fed meeting, with an 11.1% chance of no cut at all. there is a 0% chance of a 50 basis point rate cut.
I would agree with that.
You think that seems about right? I was going to ask you.
Yeah, I would go along with those numbers completely.
Yeah, I think it's a overwhelming odds are that he does cut next time after the jobs revisions on for last Friday.
Yeah, and that was really bad timing because the Fed had had their meeting already thinking that those great big numbers were true.
Right.
And then 2 days later, they get shot down by the BLS. And I can't put this one on the Fed because of they were, which I guess that shows all the reason for all this controversy. Ever since the woman who was in charge of the BLS got fired by Trump, of course, all the liberal media said he fired her because he didn't like the
results.
That's so stupid, people. He fired her because the numbers are completely unreliable. And little things like, you know, whether the Fed changes rates depend on those numbers.
Exactly. It is such a big deal, those numbers. And listen, if she was just following protocol and that they were seeing this type of data and it's going crazy, I understand that she did her job to the letter of what she was supposed to do. But as the head of the BLS, if you're seeing that your systems are no longer working, change them. Modernize. Do something better.
It's been talked about. It's been written about for months and months and months. And she had a year in there, as I recall.
Last 2023 or 2024. I can't remember.
And during that time, nothing changed. She was there for over a year.
Yeah.
And she didn't bring this stuff up to date. They're still using antiquated communication methods, antiquated statistical controls, whole thing.
And it's the government. So I know things can move slowly, but start requesting money from Congress to make the changes that you need to make or announce your plans or do something, but don't just live with this broken system where you're announcing bad data that people are using to make world-changing decisions.
Yeah, let me posit this. When you have to come in front of God and everybody at the end of a year and say, oops, we missed about 818,000 jobs, so we just took those off. Yeah. And you don't explain it, and you don't look for corrections, and you don't go in front of Congress and try to save your own job, your job isn't very safe.
No, and I'd be embarrassed, frankly, if I put out data that bad.
Absolutely.
So, anyways, the whole controversy around that shouldn't be a controversy. I think if Trump appoints someone who's ready to go in and make changes, I think we start to see less of these crazy revisions, and I think it's possible.
And what if they always do this on the first Friday of a new month. What if they took a while and did the second Friday and just took another week to
get over
the data and see if they can tweak it a little bit better? It's not going to change anything dramatically from a policy standpoint or operational standpoint from what I could see. So there have to be changes, and Trump made changes. That's how it's supposed to work, people. We will take a quick break. Be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. And our trivia question brought to you by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm, 904-636-7888. I had some contacts with them literally and figuratively this week, and everything to satisfaction, quick and professional, just as good as it can get. I like it. So probably you've been hearing a lot about, I'll tell you the reason I'm bringing this up now, and I'll talk more about it later, but there is a recent executive order that is an instruction to the Treasury to start to allow different kinds of assets in your 401k.
Mm-hmm.
One of those is private equity. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with private equity has a few different lines with it. But one of the biggest things they do is they pool a bunch of private money and they buy out a company that's listed on the exchange. It's called taking it private. Then they have all kinds of regulations and reporting and so on that go away. So it's much easier to control and much more profitable. And so as those things go in a world of high finance, they do it a lot. So my question, is very simple. We have lost a lot of companies. If you count the number of companies that are listed on our exchanges, all the various and sundry exchanges, it has dropped a lot. It peaked in 1997. What percentage have we lost? Percentage of listed companies on our exchanges. What percentage have we lost up to the end of 03? And we'll go to the phone. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you this morning?
Oh, excellent. And you?
Oh, finer than frog's fur.
Good. What's up today?
Yeah, finer than frog's fur. Hey, gentlemen, I'm an older individual. I'm 73.
Not older than I am.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. I would imagine. I'm hearing that you're pretty old there.
Yeah, sneaking up
and making it another year on the radio is a good thing, right?
I guess. So, yeah.
I try and remind him of that all the time.
You should. You should just rub it right into his ribs there as he's sitting next to you with headphones on. Hey, so I'm 73. This is the year I guess I have to take a distribution, correct?
Afraid so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that has to be done when?
Anytime before the end of the year. There's no restrictions or guidance on when you have to take it out. You can do it in 12 equal payments over the year. Obviously, it's too late to do that now, but many people do that. Other people take it all in December. Generally, if you don't need the money, December should be your target, because then theoretically most years are up and you have time to let it grow during that year in the tax protection of your IRA, and then you take it out. A lot of times we see people actually make more money during the year in their IRA than what they're required to withdraw. So your IRA is still growing, even though you're doing your RMDs.
I think I'll submit it at 11:59 on December 31st.
If you do that, you're going to get fined because there won't be anybody home to take care of it.
Nope.
Darn.
Hey, we start about the 1st of December telling people to get off their rear.
Late November, early December.
Yeah.
Okay. The other question is, I was one of these stupid people that not only had my employer contribute, but I also contributed post-tax. Is there a form, gentlemen, that I need to be looking at, or somebody that could help me look at a form? Because if I've already paid tax on some of the money that went into my account, how do I handle that? I'm naive on that.
Yeah. So actually, I wish Joey was here because he's really good with this. One of the things he really specializes in. That information is available on your tax return. There should have been a form filed by your accountant that tracks your basis, and then it doesn't. It's just an accounting thing going forward where some of your withdrawal is taxed and some is not because it's already been taxed, and it's just on a kind of a percentage basis. So we can definitely help you with that. Just need a copy of your tax return and we'll figure it out for you.
Okay. I got from my employer when I quit my 401k and got it distributed to me a form that said you had X number of dollars that are post-tax,
perfect,
X number of dollars that are pre-tax.
That's what we need.
Yep,
else.
Exactly. So, yeah. And then going forward, that will continue to be tracked on your tax return.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yep.
Do I need to get my accountant involved with this, or can I do this?
You will need to notify him or her that this is an issue with your account. But once they have the initial information, the first time you withdraw, then it'll be tracked. They'll know to do it every year. They should know.
That should go on your permanent record.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you guys are always the best, and you always are spot on your information, and I love listening to the show.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it.
I'm just out here listening to the cows churn, and hopefully...
I hear it, actually. Hearing something.
No, that's a bird. That's a bird, Adam.
Oh, okay.
That's actually a hawk chasing one of the chickens. So anyhow, you guys have a great Saturday.
Well, thanks so much.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
That's something everybody ought to be aware of. First off, if you can contribute after tax dollars to a Roth IRA, it is best to do so.
Yeah, if you, but it is limited by income, so that is so when you get in the situation.
If you can use a backdoor Roth, that's fine. If you can use a front door Roth, that's fine. Also, when you roll money out of a 401k, there is generally one chance to roll the post-tax contributions into a Roth.
Right.
And that way you don't have to worry about this. If you haven't done that, it is no problem. It is simply a ratio of the post-tax contributions to the value of the fund, and that value is applied to the taxation of every withdrawal you make for the rest of ever, basically.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of an accounting, I don't want to say a nightmare, but it's a pain.
Yeah, exactly.
But honestly, it's not that big of a deal.
No. And people, you should know, there are a lot of people who have been really pumped up on the whole concept of the Roth, and everyone should understand that it isn't always as good as it seems. If you can find your way into a Roth IRA, it's a lot better than any other way, but you do not get all the gains of your Roth type contributions unless you don't get them tax-free, unless you've had it in a Roth IRA. So you only get back what you put in. The growth on it is still taxed. So that's why it isn't as perfect as doing it the other way. It's still fine.
Yeah. But so moral of the story is if you can get it into a Roth, put it in a Roth. If you can't, don't fret. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah, and you should take a really serious look if you're contemplating contributing money to your 401k or TSP or whatever it is and doing part or all of it as a Roth. You ought to take a really good look at that because it doesn't have all the benefits that it used to have. And that can make it a little bit more of a complicated decision. And by the way, one of the things that we do very well and very frequently for people is analyze the benefits of doing that. So just so you know. All right, back. Adam had a few more comments on the market. Let's take it away.
Yeah, definitely. There was a lot of talk around when the tariffs were announced that, and I've mentioned this before, but foreign investors were going to spurn the U.S. and only stop buying our treasuries, stop buying our stocks. Well, that turned out to be complete BS, for lack of a better word. Last month, $146.3 billion flowed into new purchases of U.S. treasuries. That's one of the highest months on record. Much of that was foreign money. On the equity side, the All World Index did outperform the S&P 500 from the end of last year around Christmas to April 1st by 21%. However, since then, the S&P has outperformed by 8% in roughly the same amount of time. So we are seeing that divergence sort of close. Plus, we've been outperforming for many, many years, like seeing a short period of international outperformance is actually a welcome relief because we've all hold international equities in our funds and they haven't done anything for 10 years.
Right.
So I was pretty happy to see that.
Yeah. If we didn't have the fund manager we've got for international, I don't think any of us would be too strong on staying in it.
It's true. And it's funny because he's underperforming this year, but in every other year he's outperformed the index. It's only when the index goes crazy like it did this year where he's a little bit behind, not badly, but it is ironic that happened.
The same as we always say, don't put your money in the market if you don't have 5 years to leave it there. Don't evaluate a mutual fund manager unless you've got 5 years of history from that manager because you won't know what you've really got.
That's right.
Some days you'll think he's the biggest genius that ever lived, and other times he's just an also-ran. But over 5 years, several percentage points above any of his peer group or the indices that he
definitely
tracks. So, guy's good. There are things that we do where it's very important to us to have active management and other things, which I will talk about right after the break, that are not. We have a little situation that will cause people to take a little concern. And like I say, I'm sure there's a few of them listening now. So I want to do what I can to say, don't worry about it. We got it handled. We just don't have it handled yet. All right. All that said, we're going to have to take another break and come back. And I've got some things. The first thing I want to talk about is for those of you who are sending your kids out to college, there's some paperwork that ought to go with those kids as they go. And then you ought to, as you're getting that prepared, look in a mirror and say, this should probably apply to me too. And I promise you, about maybe not a full half of people listening here, but about half of America has not satisfied these simple things. And I'll tell you why it's so important for your kids. So hang on through the break, please. It won't be long. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I want to remind everybody that lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question, since peaking in 1997, what percentage have the number of listed stocks on our exchanges fallen? It is a whole number between 1 and 99, and there's no bracket yet, so pick up the phone, give us a call, and even if it's just a guess, it'll help other people. All right, parents sending kids to college. There's a lot of that going on these days. Some already there, some just ready to pack up. But there are three financial documents that every kid ought to have by the time they leave home. And since most of these kids are already 18, some will probably turn 18 shortly after getting there. 18 makes you an adult around here. And adults need paperwork because they obtain their own privacy. So the first thing they need to do is a simple will. Without a will, your state determines what happens to your money. Now, I'm sure most of them would look at me and say, well, that's stupid. I don't have any money. I'm going to college. But everybody has assets, and you might not even have figured out just how many you have until you actually start going over it. But how you want to dispose of your assets is up to you, but put it in a will. And then here's where the parents are really, really important. You also want the kid to have a health care advance directive and a durable power of attorney. Those things, generally speaking, would go back to the parents and say, if something happens to me, my parents are authorized to do this, this, and this, financially, medically, whatever else. Otherwise, should something happen to the kid, become disabled or hurt badly or whatever, then the parents could try to help, and they might be turned down because of the HIPAA laws and the privacy if the kid is 18. Pre-preparing an advance directive for healthcare and a durable power of attorney will get you around those things. Do them, keep them, and hope you never have to look them up. But while you're there, look at your own self. Do you have a will that's up to date? Do you have healthcare directives and durable powers that are up to date? About half of America would have to say, no, I don't. Well, what better time than when you're thinking about it for your kid to get it updated for yourself, and then everybody will get what they want when something horrible happens. And hopefully it won't, but sometimes it does. As we know, we all hear the stories day to day. So those three things, if you haven't done it, and you don't have a lot of assets, or your kid doesn't have a lot of assets, it's okay to take a website like WillMaker and go through it, make sure you follow all the rules to a T. But if you have a personal attorney and could throw this on top of your stuff that maybe is already prepared or the things you're doing at the same time, it's always preferable in a in any state probably, but especially Florida, to look at this stuff through the eyes of an attorney and make sure that it's all signed, sealed, delivered, witnessed, and people know about it and how to find it, all those simple things. Like I say, it's like any form of insurance to me. You never really want to use your insurance because it means something went wrong, but it sure is nice to have, and you can't buy it afterwards. The one time in your life you could buy insurance after the fact was Obamacare, and you know, I got nothing else to say about that except do this. You won't regret it. All right, now I mentioned a few minutes ago that Trump signed an order directing the Treasury to allow certain types of non-traditional assets in 401ks. One of them is cryptocurrencies. Well, you all pretty much know our feelings about cryptocurrency. If you want to do it, don't do it. If you're a client of ours, don't do it in any of your accounts there. And if you're not, then I'd get a separate account and do whatever you want to do, but maybe you get rich and maybe you'll go broke. I don't know. Most people don't get rich. A few do, though, and they're very high profile,
mm-hmm.
which makes it, of course, for especially for younger people, very, very desirable, I guess. But my feeling more goes to the private equity funds. And private equity is starving for money. There are so many things that they think they can do, but they're just not getting the inflows that they want. So they're lobbying for more and more ways to sell their shares and gather money, basically, is what they're doing. And it looks to me like this is going to go through. I don't have a way, personally, to trust a valuation of a private equity fund. Do you?
It depends. It depends how transparent it would be. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, to me, it's just iffy. I will be the first to admit I don't know a lot about it.
No, nor do I.
And the reason I don't know a lot about it is because I never had any interest in it. I think it's great that people do it, but private equity funds are part of the reason there are so few stocks listed on the exchanges. The other thing in there is real estate. And you can already buy real estate in your 401k. You can buy shares of a publicly traded REIT, no problem at all. And then you know exactly what your shares are worth. But when you buy a piece of real estate, which is, it now requires a specialty custodian, there are so many rules. And if you break one, even if you don't know it,
mm-hmm.
the penalty is that you just lost your entire tax-deferred IRA, 401k, whatever it is. It's immediately taxable to you, and you are in big trouble.
Yeah, definitely.
The rules are very, very complicated. You can't do anything to the property yourself. You have to hire it all out. You can't pay a penny of any repairs or anything yourself. It has to come from the owner of the real estate, which is your IRA or 401k or whatever. In an IRA, it's somewhat manageable because you do have a separate custodian. They deal with those things, and that's what they do. But when you put it in a 401k or a, I don't know if it's going to go so far as the thrift savings plan or not, but in a 401k, your money is being held by a custodian, not a custodian that's specialized in owning real estate.
Well, that could change, though.
It could, yes. It could. Maybe they'll open up special departments to do that. I don't know.
I don't love it, though, honestly.
No,
it's very complicated, and most people shouldn't be considering this. It should be for a very small subset of people.
And I know that Angela probably wouldn't like me to say this. I think she never does. But in the long run, the returns to real estate are roughly the rate of inflation. Now, if you can put that in a place where it doesn't become taxable, that's kind of a mixed bag, because a lot of what real estate gives you is current deductions
income
for depreciation. Yeah. So I can't see a real positive about adding real estate into a 401k, but I sure can see a lot of potential stumbling blocks. So just my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's not going to be widely used anyway. I can't see a lot of scenarios where people are going and buying several houses in their 401k. I just don't see it being used a lot.
I do not either. I just don't see why you'd want to crack that door open.
I agree, but again, I just don't think it's going to be popular enough to really cause too much of an issue.
Yeah, but you know, if you hear about it, and it's like crypto, you hear us talk about it, and we say not for me. That doesn't mean it's not for you, but it means kick back before you do it and take a good look. Come to talk to us or anybody else if this actually goes through. The Treasury will be updating its regulations, I would imagine, rather quickly. And we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
It's just a caution flag.
The crypto thing I'm okay with. I wouldn't use it. I'm not in love with it, but it's fine, especially if people just want to add it as a small portion of their, like a 5% or less allocation. That's whatever. But I know that one has the potential to be abused, and being 100% in crypto, I could, and if it drops, you're just out of luck.
Yeah, gold and silver are probably going to work their way into this discussion too. I don't have that as absolute, but can you imagine the process of owning physical gold or silver in a 401k?
What a pain. Oh. I mean, honestly, just buy IAU or SLV.
Absolutely. Either, if you want it in your tax-deferred account, use the ETF. And if you want it in your hand, just go to the store and buy some.
Yeah, that I don't...
With your own MasterCard or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Don't intertwine your long-term investments with this kind of thing. It's not what they're for. Besides, if you buy it that way, you'll never trade it. And gold is not a long-term investment vehicle. It's a trading vehicle.
It should be.
Yeah, used properly, that would be it. All right, I'm going to introduce this one. I don't have time to discuss it yet. But you all probably know that among the highlights of the OBBBA, we're all more or less getting a tax cut. And I do not mean that we were going to get a tax increase that we didn't get. That's not what I call a tax cut. A tax cut is when you pay less than you're paying now. And there are some very good things for a whole bunch of people in this thing. And it's going to involve a lot of people overpaying their withholding taxes. And I want to talk about that when we get back. The Treasury, the IRS, is not going to change the tables this year, but I can tell you how to do it. We'll be right back after a short break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
And the trivia question is still there. What percentage did the number of listed stocks shrink between the peak in 1997 and the end of 23? A quick note on political stupidity, I guess. By the way, if you see any Democrats from the Texas Congress wandering around, be sure to report them. They're wanted back home. The big hassle with gerrymandering, something that we've all heard about forever. A couple of real quick-thinking, sharp politicians, I guess, starting with Gavin Newsom, who tried to claim that Republicans were the real gerrymanderers. He listed 12 states to prove it. But they don't have any Democrat seats. But one problem for some of them is that Alaska, North and South Dakota, and Wyoming only have one seat. And it's pretty hard to gerrymander that. And then there was another one that said the Senate was gerrymandered in the red states. The Senate district is the outline of the state. For both senators, there is no districting. Brilliant. And then there's a few of them, like Massachusetts. Governor Healey, man, she's good for stories. I'll tell you, she's really good for stories. She says that she's going to gerrymander in response to this thing. There hasn't been a Republican elected in Massachusetts in 31 years. Marshall.
Gentlemen, the news quality that we get on that topic you were just speaking on is about as credible as the investment scam / Ponzi schemes.
You are correct.
That we have around.
Yep.
However, I do... because I know a couple of people in the private equity world, and they're mainly office buildings, commercial buildings, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But something that was brought up on the previous show, you know, we're having large amounts of single-family homes that are being bought by funds.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm presuming that there's somebody raising capital and then leveraging that with loans, or maybe they're raising enough capital to pay cash for these houses. But that is having a definite impact on the inflation on housing prices.
It is. Actually,
because they're attacking that affordable price range.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The peak has come on that. I just read that the number of homes being closed by those things is down about 6 or 8%. I can't remember which it was.
Yeah,
and it's still huge.
That's still a trend that's going to continue to recede as house prices decline. Yep. That they were doing it because housing got so hot during COVID that it was a great investment. That is not the case today. I think you're going to see a lot of that being unwound.
Hope so. I really hope so.
Good.
And you're right.
Well, I hope so. Yeah. I know there was a lot right after the 2008 debacle. They were looking at it and going, mm-hmm. Wow, if we can get this house for this price, because I had a builder that I worked with that he was just building houses for these guys. I mean, directly. They were funding the construction, you know. I hope that is the shock absorber, not setting the price, because that's when we start really getting in trouble.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a double-edged sword, too, because those homes are then put up for rent. And to be honest, there isn't a ton of inventory in the single-family home rental market, usually. And so they actually offer something unique where you can rent a single family home. So it's not all bad news when that happens, but when it gets out of control and drives prices up, it can definitely hurt people that are looking to buy homes.
Yeah, we do need to get interest rates down too. It's going to shake people out of their existing homes, and that's very important.
Because that's the real positive economics is when that first time home buyer buys the home that they can afford. That drives our economy in an extremely positive manner.
Definitely, because it's not just the home, but all the goods and services that are required to keep up the home. And it definitely, that's a big piece of the local and national economies.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for the weekly education. I appreciate it.
Did you want to take a shot at the trivia?
I haven't got a clue.
Okay.
I mean, I couldn't even set an end for you, you know?
Keep listening. I'll tell you at the end.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty.
Have a good one.
Thanks, Marshall.
All right. Say you're one of the silver staffers, for instance, in case you haven't heard the word silver staffers. The fastest growing group in the workforce today is silver staffers. That means seniors over the age of 75.
Wow.
That's what I said.
Hmm.
So I either am one or I will be next June. I'm not sure. They say over 75. Do they include 75? But anyway, senior staffers are becoming a really big thing. And 150 million jobs are expected to shift to people over the age of 55 by 2030. That's right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that this law did, seniors are getting an extra $6,000 deduction, and that deduction is not predicated on you itemizing. You get it anyway, even if you use the standard deduction, which means that if you're in a job where you're getting withholding, you're probably being overwithheld. And there is a key for that, a fix. If you fill out a new W-4 with your employer, you can change the parameters on there, whether it's filing status, multiple jobs, number of dependents, other income, other deductions on top of the standard. Any of that stuff can be estimated for the balance of this year. And based on the new W-4, your withholding will go down, and then you won't have to get such a big refund next year, and you won't be giving the government a loan. So that's what happens if you're an employee, a W-2 type. What if you're self-employed? Well, if you're self-employed and you pay yourself a payroll, you just go in and change the withholding. It's just that easy.
Yeah.
Call your provider and say, change this number to this number. So if that's the way you pay yourself, that's good. But if you don't, you probably then use 1040 ES forms for your quarterly installments. There is nothing to say that you cannot cut back on your 1040 ES. The only problem you have is making sure you don't get dinged by violating any of the safe harbor rules.
Yeah, and even if you do, the penalties on that are generally really small.
Yes.
So don't worry too much.
So if you're going to pick up an extra $2,000 between now and the end of the year by lowering two of the payments by $1,000 each, go ahead.
Yeah.
You control that. You don't have to put up with Uncle Sam to do that.
Talk to your financial professional or accountant before doing that.
Yep. Always, always, always. But that's just a little something that kind of I like. You know, when the When the government says, we're not going to fix this for you this year, fine, you fix it for yourself this year. Next year, they're going to change the tables, and it'll be automatic for you. But for now, this is a one-off where you can fix yourself. Let's see. Well, I'm not quite the trivia question yet, so we've got a minute. I put this in the category of here we go again. New Jersey has a move now in their administration, at least, to change the independent contractor rules.
Why? Why do they constantly do this?
Because bad ideas in the hands of liberal states never die.
This is such a bad thing. The whole gig economy is built around 1099 employees, and if you take that away, bye-bye Uber, bye-bye Shipped, bye-bye Instacart.
Bye-bye registered investment advisors like us.
Yep, it's so annoying.
How many of us do you think there are in the state of New Jersey? There got to be just loads of them.
Yeah.
With a heavy population and a very wealthy area of the country, these people cannot get over themselves and understand that the only model who works well that works well for a lot of their citizens is the independent model. Most people that deal with us because we're independent. They don't want to go because we're affiliated with some broker-dealer, one of the big guys, Merrill, or any of the other ones. They specifically want us to be independent, and so we're not selling them anything that's good for the company rather than good for them, that sort of thing. And they beat it down badly in California. And when you've beaten it down in California, wouldn't you think you've beaten it down in the country?
You would think.
You'd be wrong, though, wouldn't you? Here it comes again in New Jersey.
Speaking of bad ideas, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson says finances at point of no return for the city without massive tax hike. How many more people, millionaires and billionaires, can they send to Florida? That's what I read in that article.
Well, we'll keep the door open and the lights on for you. Unbelievable. All right. In the year 1997, there were 7,842 companies listed on the various exchanges in this country. Today, there's 27% less, or 5,704. That's a loss of 2,138. And by the way, for those of you who are familiar with stock indices, there's one called the Wilshire 5000, which is sort of an all stock market fund. It today contains 3,403 stocks. What gets us out of this? It's that everybody's buddy, the IPO. Initial public offerings. All these little companies that are starting up now, a lot of them are starting to hit the streets. You read about them practically every week at least.
Yeah, you can do that, or a SPAC is another way to go.
Yeah, SPACs are good, the special interest groups, funds, whatever. And those people are helping to write those numbers. We don't want it to get too narrow, because when it gets too narrow, you do not have the ability to do a good job of spreading it out. So more next week. Don't miss it. We'll be back then.